Welcome to a conversation with Master Chow and Alan. Alan, if you'd like to say hello for the recording.
Oh, hello everybody.
And Alan will be asking Chow the questions on today's subject. So let's see if Chow's ready.
How are you?
Oh, still dead. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Still alive, I think.
You answered my question that time.
Okay.
Sometimes I say I'm still dead and you just carry on as if I haven't made a joke.
Well, I know that you're more alive than we are, so I understand what you're saying.
Well, that's a nice point of view. And quite apt, I think, for today's conversation.
It is, and this one's about mediumship. So, it seems a good place to start by perhaps asking you to define mediumship and explain its true purpose, and perhaps also define the categories of mediumship and why they differ from one another.
Okay, so we're starting with a very big question.
Mm.
But that's all right. So mediumship, in a nutshell, is very easy to explain. It is the avenues for spirit to communicate with humanity. So its functionality is simply that, to create conduits and pathways to enable spirit to communicate with humanity, whether that is an individual, a group of individuals, or the entire species. So that is it. In a nutshell, that is what mediumship is. Within that, of course, there are then lots of different pathways. So different versions and ways in which we do that, from the very simple things which historically, you might be more familiar with the rappings, the knockings, the tappings, and the throwing furniture around the room, right the way through to transmediumship and the lectures, and everywhere in between. So mediumship tends to fall into different categories depending on the methods being used within it. So whether we are merely communicating and connecting with your mind, or whether we are using the entire medium and their body and energy in order to speak directly ourselves. So there really is quite a broad spectrum.
I mean, do you subscribe to the idea that there's generally three categories of medium, which is physical, trance, and mental mediumship?
Well, physical and trance sit together sort of as a family, and then mental mediumship is a family.
Right. Okay, so what would you say is the difference then between mediumship and psychic awareness? Because a lot of people get mixed up between these two, and they often believe they're the same thing. And I think this also extends to many people in spiritualist churches and centres who have some degree of psychic perception, and of course in using it they believe they're actually doing mediumship.
Which is a shame, and which is sad, because they are two very different things. But they often go hand in hand, and that's why people get confused, because you can do both when you are working with a client, if you are a vessel. So psychic awareness belongs to your human part of your life, your human aspect, your physical form. So psychic is the ability to read the energy of the world around you. So that's your physical world. Has nothing to do with spirit. So animals have a degree of perception, of extrasensory perception. You as an animal, part of the ecology of your planet, have psychic awareness, extrasensory perception, because it's all to do with your survival instinct. It's all to do with being able to read the world around you to understand threats and safety. So that, first and foremost, is the reasoning behind psychic, and then it gets more refined and can be more honed in some individuals who can pick up greater degrees of information coming from somebody's energy.
So we're talking about reading energy, or reading auras, for example.
Reading auras, reading objects, reading the energy around a person, but within the physical context, not spirit.
I would imagine that reading the energy of the environment is perhaps an important aspect of survival, wasn't it, in the earlier times?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. And animals still do it. You'll often see, if you watch herds of animals, there'll be one who is on guard duty.
Yeah.
And often they will seem to react before they have heard or smelt the threat.
Mm.
Because their instincts tell them there's a threat. They listen a little bit closer, they hear it.
So I mean, do you define psychic awareness perhaps as another, just another phrase for intuition?
No, intuition is your soul.
Oh, right, okay.
Psychic is instinct.
Mm.
Psychic is the awareness of things that are happening around you in a physical sense. So threat assessing very much is what most people will understand their psychic ability does without knowing that's what it is.
Mm.
But it can get far more detailed than that. It's like a muscle. You can work it. So some of you will have 20/20 vision and have very good eyesight. Some of you have no eyesight. Psychic works exactly the same way. Some of you have nothing seemingly working, but it's there in the background, right the way through to 20/20 psychic ability, where you can pick up a lot of information down to the individual. And it can be exercised, it can be developed, it can be honed, but it needs to be a certain level or a certain degree before you can hone it. So if it's very in the background, sitting really in the survival, it's quite hard to hone that into something very sharp.
Okay, right. Now, you mentioned extrasensory perception. I think the way we would look at that down here, I mean, we tend to associate it with things like telepathy, precognition, remote viewing, psychokinesis. Now, are these related in any way to mediumship, or are they aspects of psychic awareness, or are they something different again?
They're all aspects of psychic, because they're all dealing with the energy around you.
Right.
So they are all ways of working with, manipulating, and interpreting the energy of the world around you.
So
extrasensory perception and psychic belongs in a family together.
Together, right, okay. Well, I mean, where would you play psychometry? Presumably that's psychic, is it? Because it's reading energy.
It's reading the energy off of an object, yes.
Right, okay.
But it's often used as a doorway for mediumship. So by using the object to make a strong connection to the querent, the client, the person who you're going to be reading, helps then make a link to the spirits who want to speak to them. So it's often used as a bridge into mediumship, but it belongs to psychic.
Well, I have actually heard it said as well that there can be situations, for example, where a medium's doing a demonstration. This is probably more to do with mental mediumship, where sometimes spirit will pass information to the medium on a psychic level about the person to give it to them, because it's perhaps easier than doing it through the mediumship route. Is there any truth in that?
No.
No, that's interesting.
No, because how could spirit give it to you in the psychic way?
What does that mean? That was actually given to me, actually, at a workshop I attended with by a very well-known medium who believed that spirit can operate on the psychic level as well as the mediumship level.
But how would that work? The whole point is you're reading the physical energy around you, and we are non-physical.
Well, it left me puzzled, but I thought I'd ask you.
No, that leaves me puzzled too as to quite what they could be thinking with that.
Yeah.
No,
yes,
mediumship
indeed
is to do with the energy coming from spirit to you. No, we would not work psychically. That makes no sense.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
So I think there is a misunderstanding there in that person's mind about what is going on.
Well, the interesting thing is that the individual in question does call himself a psychic medium, so perhaps there's a connection there as well.
Perhaps because they don't recognise the boundaries between the two ways of working.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Now, I know we touched on this subject before, actually, when we talked about spiritualism, but as this is a separate recording, what's the relationship between mediumship and spiritualism? Because many people do think of them as being synonymous with each other.
No, one is the religion and one is communication from spirit. Mm-hmm. So though they are parallel, they have a relationship to each other, they are also separate. You do not need to believe in the religion in order to seek the wisdom of spirit through a medium. And you do not need to believe in evidence from a medium in order to go and sit in the religion, though you would need to believe in spirit.
Right.
So, you know, they are separate, but they do have a relationship to each other. But one relies more heavily on the other. So the religion tends to rely on mediumship, which is a shame, it does not need to. But mediumship does not rely on the religion.
Right, okay. Now, what's the oldest form of medium? I think most people, if they had to make an educated guess, they would say it was either trance or physical, and probably think that mental mediumship came along much longer, later rather. Is that correct?
So the oldest form of mediumship is trance.
Trance, right.
So that is where we began. We began with embodying the vessel embodying the medium in order to communicate directly.
Mm.
What you see now as mediumship, and most people recognize as mediumship, would be mental mediumship. That came along later.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the newer one. Though channeling is the more recent of all of them.
Mm, mm. I mean, what is the difference then between channeling and trance?
The level at which it is working. Because trance mediumship is the deepest level. By that we mean the most convoluted and also the deepest seated. So because trance mediumship requires two very distinct things. One, the medium themselves to go into an altered state of consciousness. Two, the medium to allow us to blend and take control of their energy and their body in order to speak for ourselves.
Mm.
So that is the deepest form. Channeling is lighter. We don't, by that we mean we don't come in to the medium as deeply. So we sit more out in the aura than we would with trance, where we come deeper in and we take more control of the body's functions, even to the depth of breathing.
So if you're talking about something like inspired speaking, for example...
No, that belongs to the family of mental mediumship.
Oh, does it?
Because that is going through your mind.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I was thinking that would probably belong more to channeling than to trance, but that's more mental mediumship.
No, that's mental mediumship. So your inspirational is mental mediumship, because it's flowing through your mind. We are not sat within your aura. We are not even in the same room with you. So that sits with mental mediumship, as in flowing all through the mind.
Right, okay. So as trance was the original form of mediumship, I mean, can we now talk about how does trance actually work and what are the prerequisites for doing it properly?
When you say prerequisites, what do you mean? The skill set the vessel needs to have? Or?
That's right, yeah, the training, the skill sets. What needs to be in place before you can do it?
So for trance mediumship, because of the nature of the work, it tends to be a vocation, it tends to be a calling. There tends to be an agreement to do it pre-birth. Because it's very encompassing of the medium's life. They are literally sharing their body, their energy and their mind with spirit. And also altering their state of consciousness, so they are stepping out of their life for a length of time in order for us to step forward completely without interference and communicate. So it is a marriage, a very deep marriage, it's a very intimate relationship between spirit and their vessel.
Okay, thank you. Now, what dangers does it pose, actually, for the person doing trance? Because I mean, I've heard stories before about people doing trance and suffering, you know, issues like fluctuations in blood sugar levels,
mm-hmm.
diabetes,
yes.
and so on. I mean, what is the truth of all of that?
Oh, there's truth in it, yes.
Mm.
Because as we enter your aura, we affect your physiology.
Right.
So your body does react to us as it would react to any foreign body coming into your system. So we can trigger blood pressure changes, body temperature changes, palpitations and alterations in hormone levels and blood sugar. It's why it's something that has to be developed over a period of time to allow the body and the medium's aura to get to a place of harmony with the work and stability with it. And it's also why self-care is so important and an understanding of one's energy is so important. And often, historically, the issues that you see with trance mediums is because there wasn't enough understanding in the physiological impact and the energetic impact.
Right. I mean, are there supplementary practices that trance mediums can do to improve their own situation in that sense? I mean, I'm thinking things like Tai Chi, Qigong, yoga, meditation. Do these things really help?
But it depends from vessel to vessel as to whether they would assist or not.
Right.
So it is down to their own physiology and their own body systems as to what their bodies would need. So some might benefit indeed from Tai Chi. You know I am a big advocate for that. Less so, not such an advocate for yoga. But good health care, good self-care on a physical and an energetic level. But also an understanding that this is marathon, not sprint.
Mm, mm. So it sounds to me then, it's something where you probably need to be born with the constitution for it.
In a sense, because your soul has agreed to do it, the body is then on board with it at an earlier age.
Yes.
So the stability and the functionality within the system is there to support it.
Mm. Okay.
Because it does push the body a lot more than people realize, particularly the deeper we come in. This is why channeling is easier. It's easier on the medium. It's less physical in that sense. So it's easier, it has less of a knock-on effect. It still does affect the physiology, but not as extensively as trance will do. Mm-hmm. And indeed, physical mediumship, where you're producing phenomena, does even more so.
Yes, I mean, of course, that's probably the most demanding form of mediumship.
Absolutely, on the physical body, yes.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, kind of moving on to physical mediumship, and of course we have the three main categories, don't we? Direct voice, transfiguration, and material, full body materialisation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most people who are interested in this rare form of mediumship, I mean, they know it's connected with using ectoplasm, but they probably don't know what ectoplasm is or where it comes from, so perhaps you could talk about that?
It's the dissolved lining of your stomach and bodily fluids.
Really?
Hmm.
I guess that's quite gruesome, that does.
Yes, it's not very nice, but it works. But it's also why it can do reparable harm to the vessel if the vessel is not prepared well and has not got the physical stamina for it. You know, ectoplasm comes from the medium's body. It is a substance which we create out of cells from the medium's body. It's why, to be honest, it is rare, because it takes such a toll on the medium's body. It cannot. We can't avoid that. It's why over the years we have been trying to develop other ways of producing phenomena that do not require us to break down cells from the medium's body.
And yet, having said that, there seems to be so much interest in it these days. I mean, do you think it's undergoing some kind of revival?
But the thing is, I think that is because you are so drawn to theatre and spectacle that I'm not sure it is getting a revival for the right reasons. A revival because you need proof that spirit go on is absolutely fine, but a revival because you want spectacle is not fine.
So, because of the dangers of working with ectoplasm, and of course the potential damage it can do to the medium, is that the main reason why physical mediumship went into a long-term decline?
Well, yes. You know, they were dying out.
Literally.
Literally. The lifespan of a physical medium can be shortened by doing the work. But that is the choice that they make. It is a choice. We do not push any medium into doing it, nor with trance. Just because your soul has agreed to it does not mean you do not have free will and cannot say no once you are incarnated. So you will be led to it, you will feel a calling towards it, but it is still your choice whether you commit, because we appreciate there are consequences to it.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it, that Leslie Flint, of course, was the famous direct voice medium. I mean, he lived a ripe old age. I mean, is it the direct voice, for example, is a milder
thing? But he lived a ripe old age, but he came to the work later in life.
Oh, right, did he? I didn't know that.
So you have to consider the length of time he was doing it for.
Oh, yeah, right, okay, right.
And also what sort of phenomena he was producing.
Hmm.
So the direct voice actually requires less ectoplasm than a full apparition, or indeed moving a lot of objects around the room.
Yeah, indeed.
So the phenomena he produced also required less cellular breakdown.
And would you put transfiguration into the same category as well?
Well, that depends, because there are many different types of transfiguration. If it's transfiguration through an ectoplasmic mask, then that would require a lot of the vessel. If it's perceived transfiguration, where we are projecting our energy across the face of the medium, so we are working with energy rather than ectoplasm, that takes far less toll on the medium, but is far harder for everybody to see.
Yes, I must admit, actually, I've attended a demonstration by perceived transfiguration, and I think on one occasion I saw nothing, but on another occasion I did see the shape of the hands changing.
Yes.
So I would imagine your sensitivity or awareness perhaps is going to vary from time to time.
But also the angle at which you are sitting, whether you are directly face on, whether the lighting in the room is conducive or not. There are lots of factors to whether you perceive it when we are working energetically in the aura rather than using an ectoplasmic mask.
Okay. And now you did actually mention, you were talking about the plans to replace ectoplasm with something else. I mean, I've known quite a long time ago, actually. You mentioned to me that spirit would like to use light, as I think was the word you used.
Yes,
to replace ectoplasm. I mean, how is that progressing? Is it going anywhere?
Not as far as we would like. But the problem is we keep being drawn back into people wanting spectacle. And of course, it isn't going to be spectacular until we can master it. So it needs people to give it time to develop, where we can work with energy in a very different way. But also it requires making a lot of energy, and that also is a stumbling block. People aren't in control of their own energy enough to help us build sufficient energy in the space for that sort of work.
So, with reference to the Skoll experiment, which took place over a five-year period in Norfolk in England, this was many years ago, I mean, was that an attempt to use light? Was that like the beginnings of it?
But it was more being driven by humanity than by spirit.
Right.
So, yes, it was sort of sitting in the same idea, but coming from you rather than from us. So we are experimenting with different ways we can project our energy through a vessel.
So what are the requirements then for the vessel if you're going to be doing something like this?
Well, willingness to allow us to experiment, a group of people who are willing to support it and to sit and build a lot of energy to see what we can create. Consistently create. It's no good just doing it once. We have to consistently be able to create it and then understand the process so we can get more vessels doing it. And we just haven't got there yet.
Right.
And we may not, because you keep bringing us back to the spectacle.
Okay, right, thank you. So perhaps moving on to mental mediumship now. Now, this appears to be related to the usual loss of life in World War One and the many questions it posed in the minds of the public about their lost friends and relatives. I mean, there was this desperate need to find answers to their questions.
Absolutely.
And that could not be satisfied by conventional religion. And I think attempts to pass the tragedy off as the will of God was no longer acceptable to the public. Was that really the beginnings of it, the mental mediumship?
Well, mental mediumship was already around a little bit. There was some of it where the trance mediumship of the day was rather light.
Right.
But with the demand for proof, the demand for healing the grief, mental mediumship as a mechanical process was far quicker, far easier on the medium, and meant that there could be a much quicker turnover. I'm sorry to sound quite functional about that, but that really was the nature of it. With a trance medium bringing through a loved one, they might only do one or two in an hour-long session, whereas a mental medium could do a dozen. So the demand was there, the need was there, and we found a way to match that need. First World War and then the Second World War, pushing it ever more to the forefront. And of course, then when we're into speed and we're into quantity, humanity then grabs hold of it and goes, well, that's all we want.
And of course, these days it has pretty much taken over.
Correct, yes, which was never our intent.
Yeah, I mean, do you think this has been very much to the detriment of the, perhaps of transmediumship?
Yes.
This has happened?
Yes.
Yeah.
But we understand it. We recognise why humanity has latched onto evidence. But the point is, once we've proved we exist, you should then be seeking what else? It was never meant to get stuck at just keep proving it. You know, if you think about a lot of your science, once they prove a theory, you don't keep demanding them to keep proving it.
No, they use it and move on.
Absolutely. But with us, you keep demanding we keep proving it.
Well, I think the trouble is, I think we shot ourselves in the foot a little bit with all this evidence-based mediumship. And I think until we can start moving beyond that...
Yes, back to philosophy.
It will be a problem.
Back to wisdom, back to teaching, yes.
Obviously,
evidence needs to be in there. Messages from loved ones who have passed will always be part of the work. We're not talking about denying that. Of course not. We never did. But just leveling it back out, putting it into the mix of communication instead of the only communication. Because then there is a lot of wisdom you're not getting access to.
Okay, so on the subject of wisdom then, let's talk about the role of mediumship in spiritualist philosophy. I mean, going back to the early days of spiritualism, I mean, to what extent did spirit use transmediumship to deliver philosophy, with perhaps spirit stepping forward to give talks and lectures? I mean, this appears to have been quite popular with
mediums
like
Emma
Hardy's Britain.
Yes, absolutely, it was very popular. Most of them did philosophy and a little bit of mental mediumship evidence.
Yeah.
Philosophy was the mainstay.
So you're talking about the famous trance lectures.
Very, very good philosophy too.
Yeah. Oh, but I think that's one of the problems, isn't it, that we now hijack philosophy, probably for egotistical reasons. I mean, I've seen many demonstrations supposedly of philosophy in spiritualist churches, but it's a bit of a laugh really, because a lot of it is little more than common sense.
Yes, and that's not what we were bringing through. We were bringing through thought-provoking lectures in order to help you ask questions, to help you solve some of your own mysteries, and develop and evolve as a species and indeed as a soul.
So
lot of that wisdom doesn't get asked for.
So of course, one of the most famous communicators, of course, when we're talking about trance mediumship and spirit communicating through, was of course Silver Birch. How did you view his communications?
Be careful how I speak about a colleague. The problem is that he was a little one-dimensional at times.
Mm.
A little too rigid in some of his purview and a little too religious in his underpinning. But that was because of his audience. He spoke to the audience that he had. And of course, if you keep going back over his teachings, you keep going back into that audience's mindset.
Mm.
Instead of meeting the audience that you have today with wisdom that suits their mindset. So he's a little old-fashioned, I suppose, would be a way of viewing it. Mm. As an energy, he was also quite strident, quite strict.
But was he in spirit in the way that you are, or was he a soul in reflection?
Hovered a little bit on the border.
Oh, was he?
Mm.
All right. So that would suggest he was at the end of reflection, or near to?
Yes. And also why at times he could be a little one-dimensional.
Oh, okay. All right. So what advice would you have then to people wanting to become a medium? I mean, traditionally much of the training of mediums would take place in circles,
yes.
They usually start off in an open circle, then move on to a closed circle,
mm-hmm.
usually the spiritual church or centre, and gradually refine their skills. Of course, these days there's many more options available, including workshops and seminars at all sorts of places,
yes.
And also much of it has moved online as well these days. I mean, what are the important principles to observe for safe and effective training?
Firstly, is to understand who it is you are talking to.
Right.
A deeper and better understanding of actually what you believe spirit is. Because otherwise you open the door to anything and everything to start talking to you, including your own ego. So you need to have a foundational understanding of what it is you are trying to seek guidance, wisdom, communication from. Then understanding that you are both a physical being, a spiritual being, and an energetic being, and making sure you are taking care of the body, the mind, and your energy. And then patience.
Mm-hmm.
You try to do it too fast. Nowadays, you're all in such a hurry. Quick, quick, quick. And all that leads to is poor quality. So it needs time. It needs time for you to find yourself within the work, as well as honing your skills. It takes time to find what level suits you. Are you more of a mental medium? Are you more of an inspirational speaker? Or indeed, are you drawn to working in trance? They all need to be explored as you are led to them, as you are guided to experience them.
Mm.
And also understanding that it is not one size fits all.
Right.
You will find some types of mediumship just do not suit you. And that is perfectly fine. Own the type that suits you. Don't feel you have to call it something else because that's more fashionable. If you are a mental medium, be proud to be a mental medium. If you are a mental medium who does not bring through proof of survival, be proud that that's what you do, that you bring through guidance.
Mm.
Don't start calling it other things.
I think, well, actually, there's a tendency these days, perhaps particularly for mental mediums, that they see so many other people doing it, and then the ego gets involved, and they want to be special, so they'll then try and divert into trance or physical mediumship.
Yes.
And that's more for themselves than because they're suited to it.
Absolutely, and then it doesn't fail. It just fails, falls flat on its face. It's not good. Or worse still, their ego tells them they're succeeding at it. And then, of course, they're not. And that will ultimately cause them problems down the line that will take work to resolve. So what we see a lot is, particularly with the word channeling, that it's being used to describe lots of things, when it is actually just a lighter form of transmediumship.
Yes, yeah.
And that's where it belongs, but it gets sort of moved around to, well, I don't do mental mediumship where I do proof of survival, so I must be doing channeling. No, you're doing mental mediumship, but you're not delivering proof of survival. Absolutely fine. As long as the communication is coming from spirit, it's fine.
Yeah.
But you get very narrow in your thinking. You really do need to broaden your minds instead of narrowing your minds all the time.
Mm. Okay. So what is the role of spirit guides in mediumship? I mean, this might be a good time to introduce the main guide, the doorkeeper, and the guardian angel.
Well, no,
how should mediums be working with their guides?
Well, they don't. They don't belong in mediumship at all.
Really?
No, they're your personal guides.
Mm.
They guide you on your life.
But presumably you need the doorkeeper to protect you, don't you, while you're doing mediumship?
But the thing is that you have to recognize, first and foremost, the doorkeeper should be protecting you, the person.
Mm.
So if you have a relationship with your doorkeeper as your personal guide, then it extends to when you are working as a medium.
Right, yeah.
They're not there for your mediumship.
Mm.
Your mediumship will have working guides who are there for your mediumship, who right. do not help you with your life. So your main guide's job is to guide you in your life. Your working guide will be there to help you with your mediumship.
So, but is it fair to say, though, that the working guides, as you've said, if they come in for the mediumship, they should only be there with the permission of the main guide?
Yes.
Yeah. So you shouldn't just accept anybody that comes in that wants no. to be a guide on mediumship?
Correct.
Right, yeah, yeah. Because I see a lot of this in spiritualism where somebody turns up and they just accept it simply because they announce themselves to be your guide.
Which is not. You should be challenging it the same as you would challenge any person at your front door.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
You know, just because a person stands at the front door and tells you that they have a right to come into your home, you don't just go, oh, well, all right, then you come. You know, you want to know why, you want to see their identification. You may indeed choose to slam the door in their face. Spirit is no different. Just because we approach you doesn't mean you have to welcome us in with open arms. You should have discernment.
Mm, indeed. Yeah, yeah. Right, okay. So what about the energetics of mediumship? I mean, we can talk here perhaps about the importance of opening up and closing down correctly. Mm-hmm. And also, what does sitting in the power mean? And what are the issues to be aware of when doing this?
Well, the problem with sitting in the power is it's a little bit loose in its ideology.
Mm.
And it tends to be coming from the power within you expanding out, which can lead to exhaustion and being drained afterwards if you're not replenishing it.
Mm.
So sitting in the power comes from an idea of raising your vibration up to meet spirit. Whereas in fact what we are trying to do is come down to you.
Right.
We don't need you to come and meet us. You have a link with us all the time, which we would like strengthened, but actually we come to you. So in mental mediumship, we reach out to you, and in trance mediumship, we literally come and stand in you.
Mm.
So we don't want you reaching out to us. We need you to stay put, because we want to communicate with the people who are in front of you, not the people who are hovering in the air above you. So sitting in the power can be a bit difficult. It can work against you. But also, it's a very nice space. It tends to lead people to euphoria and to bliss, which is why a lot of people like it.
Mm-hmm.
But it can destabilize your aura if you are not careful, if you are not grounded and you're not taking care of yourself. So it does need to be managed. It needs to be understood.
Yeah.
Same mm-hmm. as working with your chakras and your aura. It's more structured. It has more control in it. Therefore, its impact on your system is more managed.
But when people talk about opening up and closing down, is it fair to say what we're talking about here is opening up from neutral and then closing back to neutral?
Absolutely. So it's changing your energetic structure from the requirement for your daily life to mm-hmm. a requirement for an active form of mediumship and then back to daily life again.
Right. Now, related to that, of course, you have talked previously with me as well in private conversations about energetic cleavage and how that can occur. And it appears that this is when a person is spending too much time working with their upper chakras.
Yes.
And the lower centres become very underactive. I mean, how much of a problem is this?
Well, unfortunately, you are so driven as a species to going high.
Yeah.
That all that going high is pulling you apart. Mm. And you're no longer wanting to be in your body, is not engaging with the lower chakras or indeed engaging with the fact that you belong in the physical realm. So you are pulling yourselves away from your truth, which is you are here walking a human life, walking a physical life.
Mm.
So that does affect you energetically and causes disruption within your energy system, which would then knock on to your mediumship. The mediumship would inadvertently cause even more damage in that structure.
So if a person, for example, is too open and they've been opening up and not closing down, the chakras are bigger than they should be, perhaps,
yes.
the aura's bigger, what remedial measures should they take to get back to a normal state of functioning?
Well, they need to start bringing their energy back in. They need to start doing proper energy maintenance and actually stay away from spirit for a little while they repair and bring their energy system back into neutral. So reducing everything in size, releasing excess energy, restabilizing the system and regrounding and ensuring that they are physically embodied. So you're in your physical body, you're in your physical life, allowing us to connect to you instead of trying to take off and fly up to what? Come up to us? No, that's not what you're here for.
So presumably a good grounding practice then that, you know, allows you to remain grounded and stable would perhaps be meditation or perhaps Qigong, something of that nature?
Well, meditation isn't about grounding. So meditation is about coming into the inner contemplation and hearing your inner voice, which is your soul. And for some people, that might help them ground, but it isn't the function of it.
Right, okay.
So a good grounding practice, whether that is a visualization or physical activities like Qigong, like gardening, like walking with your feet on grass, or in fact, actually all of them in combination, would be better.
Okay, right. Now, looking at mediumship, particularly on the platform, I mean, would you agree that psychics are gradually taking over from mediums? Because whilst obviously a lot of people come in with some degree of psychic awareness, and of course they work with this and they start getting results, and of course that's exciting, and it's easy to believe that you are doing mediumship, and then of course they can't wait to go on the platform and start doing their stuff there. But as a consequence of this, it appears that there's now many more psychics now operating on the platform than there used to be, and it kind of seems to be taking over mediumship in a way.
But the thing is, there would be no problem with that as long as they were all taking ownership of the fact that they'd be working psychically.
But they don't know, do they?
And that's the problem. The lack of knowledge, not the fact that they're doing it. So if you stood up there and said, I am a psychic and I'm going to do readings, and everyone in the audience knew that, then that's absolutely fine. But if you stand up there claiming to do mediumship when you're actually working psychically, that is a problem. And ignorance, unfortunately, is becoming more systemic. Because it's a bit like a Chinese whisper. If your teacher teaches you that they're the same, then you're going to teach the people you know that they're the same, and so on and so on and so on.
Yeah.
So it is becoming a bit of a Chinese whisper. The lines are getting blurred. The detail within the training is unfortunately being lost.
It was interesting, actually. I mean, in the same way that mental mediumship kind of, in a way, took over from trance and became the predominant form of mediumship, I mean, do you think psychic perception, awareness, doing what they do, might eventually take over from mental mediumship? And that could be sidelined because there'll be so many people doing it, and also, as you say, teaching it.
No. Because, unfortunately, it isn't... There isn't the clarity in the information. So people will get disinterested in it.
Oh, right.
So though it may become more dominant, it'll fail because it won't deliver the quality of information that the people are seeking, that mediumship could. Because psychic delivers very different information. Psychic is also very subjective. So if you have an audience who is getting constantly subjective information that they may not be able to match to their circumstances because of the subjective nature, they're going to get bored and disinterested. So if that is the pathway, eventually your audience will abandon you.
Right, okay.
So it will only go so far before it will basically lose its audience. And either then the mediumship has got to come back in order to draw the audience back in because of the different type of information, or the whole system collapses, which would be a terrible shame.
It would indeed, yeah.
But sometimes things have to fall in order to be reborn, in order to be recreated, in order for past mistakes to be corrected. Sometimes things do have to fall. And perhaps that is the case here. Perhaps it has to go full circle into collapsing in order to be rebuilt from its original beginnings, where it was all being driven by communication with lecturers and wisdom, coupled with evidence. So it can go full circle and step forward new and improved.
A reincarnated version of itself, in other
words. Absolutely, yes. But a reincarnated based on growth, experience and understanding, rather than a repetition.
Well, of course, that does require the transmission of true information about this. I mean, you have mentioned before about centres of learning. How important do you think that is?
Yeah, very important. There needs to be places that can become, not Mecca, I don't want it to be a religious place where it holds the information in its tight clutches. And I use Mecca there as in a very loose sense. I'm not referencing it to the religious place, but it as a symbol in an idea. They should be places where the information expands outwards from. So points that create the start of a ripple, not a point that holds itself tightly. So if you drop a pebble into water, it should ripple outwards, yes? Rather than drop and stay stagnant. If the centers become encompassed, enclosed, and insular, then nothing will grow.
Well, as so many things have moved online these days, do you think there's a case for a centre of learning to be online as well?
Of course, you have to adapt to the way things are working, but some things do need to be done face-to-face.
Mm.
We are talking about energy here, and to do energy work, you do need to feel it. You do need to be in the presence of it. Mm. So not everything can easily be done long distance like this.
Mm-hmm.
So there needs to be a marriage of some sort, a coming together and a connection. It's all to do with connection, isn't it?
Mm. Yes, yeah.
So the connection long distance, but also the connection in the close and personal. It isn't either or. It needs to be everything.
So how would spirit like to use mediumship going into the future? I mean, it seems apparent to me that spirit would like to develop a more conversational basis for interacting with us.
Mm-hmm.
I know a few energies like yourself have stepped forward to try and make some progress with this.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, do you think this will be a growing trend as we go forward into the future?
It is our wish, it is our hope, but we do also know that we run into lots of barriers.
Mm.
We run into people that we have to keep proving ourselves to, and then that just slows down the process all the time. So the information and the wisdom is here, but you have to allow us to bring to you what we can, rather than making demands of us of what you would like.
Yeah, yeah. But isn't the real problem as well with your situation as well, of course, that it's the lack of good transmediums and the fact there's not many people training for it?
Yes. Or there are many people training for it who are not called to it.
Mm. Yeah.
So, yes. But there has always been a lack. There has always only ever been a few, because it is such a rare type of work. It does require so much of the vessel. There's always been fewer of them. But even a few can make a big difference if they are allowed the platform.
Mm. But is there any alternative to transfer, direct communication, or does it have to be done that way?
Well, channeling, which is easier, is accessible. It doesn't always have to be spoken. It can also be written, so that'll help it disseminate to greater audiences.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a question mark about allowing us to start the conversations again, and then it can lighten up to inspirational speaking.
Right, okay.
But we have to build the platform again where you are coming to us for things that are not proof, but also for things that are in our remit.
Mm.
You come and ask us to predict your future. That is not in our remit. You come and ask us questions about your past, wanting detailed evidence. That is not our remit. We are trying to guide humanity to live your true lives, to live lives that are harmonious and happy, not full of suffering. That is our remit. But we can only work within your free will. And if you keep trying to push us to work against your free will, we will just have to back off and go silent.
Mm. Yeah, that would be unfortunate.
Yes, it would. But we have to respect your free will. And if you keep trying to hand us over your power, perhaps the only way to make you stop that is to stop communicating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, of course, we have to be willing to take more responsibility for our own lives.
Of course, and that is what we are trying to instill in you.
Mm.
But that is also why quite often you do not want to listen. We are not coming to give you glorifying information. We are coming to remind you of the lessons you are learning. And that makes us sometimes a bitter pill to swallow.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
But like most bitter pills, they are often the ones that are the best for you.
Mm. Right. Okay, well, we've got to the end of our questions now. Would you like to sum up on what you consider to be the most important points about mediumship?
I think mediumship needs to come back to being more rounded. It isn't just about proof. It is also about wisdom, guidance, teaching, healing, inspiring, and also making you laugh. There is a view that mediumship has to be serious, has to be glorifying. No, it has to reach you and touch you and make you think. It needs to open up and resonate within you to allow you to grow and to heal. That is what we are trying to bring forward. Mediumship is just the vessel, the vehicle for that. We must not lose sight that actually the importance is in the words, the information, the healing, not the tool. Mediumship is just the tool. The wisdom is what we're trying to convey. Yes, that would be my summary.
Okay, thank you.
So, nice to speak to you as always.
And you?
So, on that note, I say goodbye. And God bless.
Yes, goodbye. Thank you for coming.